this is the story of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Perhaps the most remarkable, certainly the most successful book ever to come out of the great publishing corporations of Ursa Minor. More popular than the Celestial Home Care Omnibus, better selling than 53 More Things to Do in Zero Gravity, and more controversial than Ulan Khaloufid's trilogy of philosophical blockbusters, Where God Went Wrong, Some More of God's Greatest Mistakes, and Who Is This God Person Anyway? And in many of the more relaxed civilizations on the outer eastern rim of the galaxy, The Hitchhiker's Guide has already supplanted the great Encyclopedia Galactica as the standard repository of all knowledge and wisdom, because although it has many omissions, contains much that is apocryphal, or at least wildly inaccurate, it scores over the older, more pedestrian work in two important ways. First, it is slightly cheaper, and second, it has the words "Don't Panic" inscribed in large, friendly letters on the cover. To tell the story of the book, it is best to tell the story of some of the minds behind it. A human from the planet Earth was one of them, though as our story opens, he no more knows his destiny than a tea leaf knows the history of the East India Company. His name is Arthur Dent. He is a 6-foot-tall ape descendant, and someone is trying to drive a bypass through his home.
Come off it, Mr. Dent. You can't win, you know. You can't lie in front of the bulldozers indefinitely.
I'm game. We'll see who rusts first.
Well, I'm afraid you're going to have to accept it. This bypass has got to be built, and it's going to be built. Nothing you can say
or Why has it got to be built?
Well, it's... What do you mean? Why has it got to be built? It's a bypass. You've got to build bypasses.
Did anyone consider the alternatives?
There are no alternatives. You were quite entitled to make any suggestions or protests at the appropriate time.
Appropriate time? The first I knew about it was when a workman arrived at the door yesterday. Oh. I asked him if he'd come to clean the windows, and he said he'd come to demolish the house.
Yes.
He didn't tell me straight away, of course. Oh, no. First he wiped a couple of windows and charged me a fiver, and then he told me...
But, Mr. Dent, the plans have been available in the planning office for the last 9 months.
Yes. I went straight round to find them yesterday afternoon. You hadn't exactly gone out of your way to call much attention to them, had you? I mean, like actually telling anybody or anything.
The plans were on display.
On display? I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch.
Well, the lights had probably gone.
So had the stairs.
You found the notice, didn't you?
Oh, yes. It was on display in the bottom of a locked filing cabinet, stuck in a disused lavatory with a sign on the door saying, "Beware of the leopard."
Mr. Dent!
Hello, yes!
Have you any idea how much damage that bulldozer would suffer if I just let it roll straight over you?
How much?
None at all.
By a strange coincidence, none at all is exactly how much suspicion the ape descendant Arthur Dent had that one of his closest friends was not descended from an ape, but was, in fact, from a small planet somewhere in the vicinity of Betelgeuse. Arthur Dent's failure to suspect this reflects the care with which his friend blended himself into human society after a fairly shaky start. When he first arrived 15 years ago, the minimal research he had done suggested to him that the name Ford Prefect would be nicely inconspicuous. He will enter our story in 17.2 seconds and say, "Hello, Arthur." The ape descendant will greet him in return. But in deference to a million years of evolution, he will not attempt to pick fleas off him. Earthmen are not proud of their ancestors and never invite them round to dinner.
Hello, Arthur.
Oh, Ford, hi, how are you?
Fine. Look, are you busy?
Well, I've just got this bulldozer to lie in front of, otherwise no, not especially.
Good.
What?
Look, there's a pub down the road, let's have a pint and we can talk.
Ford, there's a man over there who wants to knock my house down.
Arthur.
The first I knew about
Arthur.
It was yesterday when a workman
Arthur.
Came round to say he was cleaning the windows. What?
Arthur, just listen to me. I have got to tell you the most important thing you've ever heard. I've got to tell you now, and I've got to tell you in that pub there.
Why?
Because you're going to need a very stiff drink. Just trust me.
But you don't understand.
Arthur.
These
Arthur.
People are trying to
Arthur.
Knock my house.
You know you can trust me to the end of the earth.
Yes, but how far's that?
About 10 minutes away. Come on, I need a drink.
The Encyclopedia Galactica describes alcohol as a colourless, volatile liquid formed by the fermentation of sugars. and also notes its intoxicating effect on certain carbon-based life forms. The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy also mentions alcohol. It says that the best drink in existence is the Pan-Galactic Gargle Blaster, the effect of which is like having your brain smashed out with a slice of lemon wrapped round a large gold brick. The guide also tells you on which planets the best Pan-Galactic Gargle Blasters are mixed, how much you can expect to pay for one, and what voluntary organizations exist to help you rehabilitate. The man who invented this mind-pummeling drink also invented the wisest remark ever made, which was this: never drink more than 2 Pan-Galactic Gargle Blasters unless you are a 30-ton elephant with bronchial pneumonia. His name is Zaphod Beeblebrox, and we shall learn more of his wisdom later.
6 pints of bitter, and quickly, please, the world's about to end.
Oh, yes, sir. Nice weather for it. Going to watch the match this afternoon, sir?
No, no point.
Foregone conclusion, that, you reckon, sir? Arsenal without a chance?
No, it's just that the world's going to end.
Oh, yes, sir, you said. Lucky escape for Arsenal if it did.
No, not really.
Here you are, sir. 6 pints.
Right, keep the change.
From a fiver? Thank you, sir.
You've only got 7 minutes left to spend it.
Ford, would you please tell me what the hell is going on?
Drink up, you've got 3 pints to get through.
3 at lunchtime?
Time is an illusion. Lunchtime doubly so. Drink up.
Why 3 pints?
Muscle relaxant. You'll need it.
Did I do something wrong today, or has the world always been like this and I've been too wrapped up in myself to notice?
I'll try to explain. Drink up. How long have we known each other?
5 years, maybe 6. Most of it seemed to make some kind of sense at the time.
All right. How would you react if I said that I'm not from Guildford after all, but from a small planet somewhere in the vicinity of Betelgeuse?
I don't know. Why, do you think it's the sort of thing you feel you're likely to say?
Drink up. The world's about to end.
This must be Thursday. I never could get the hang of Thursdays.
On this particular Thursday, things were moving quietly through the ionosphere many miles above the surface of the planet. Several huge, yellow, slab-like somethings, huge as office blocks, silent as birds, which hung in the air exactly the same way that bricks don't. The planet was almost totally unaware of their presence. They went unnoticed at Goonhilly, they passed over Cape Canaveral without a blip, and Woomera and Jodrell Bank looked straight through them, which was a pity because it was exactly the sort of thing they'd been looking for all these years. Arthur, of course, was totally unaware of them. He was only aware of a sudden, terrible crashing noise.
What's that? Don't worry, they haven't started yet.
Good.
It's probably just your house being knocked down.
What?
3 minutes to go.
Damn you and your fairy stories, they're smashing up my home! Stop, you vandals! You home wreckers! You half-breed...
Arthur, come back! It's pointless! Hell, I better go after him. Barman, quickly, can you just give me 4 packets of peanuts?
Certainly, sir. There you are, sir. 28 pence.
Keep the change.
Are you serious, sir? I mean, do you really think the world's going to end this afternoon?
Yes, in just over 1 minute and 35 seconds.
Isn't there anything we can do?
No, nothing.
Well, I always thought we were meant to lie down or put a paper bag over our head or something.
If you like, yes.
Will that help?
No. Excuse me, I've got to find my friend.
Oh, well then. Last orders, please!
Don't bother, there isn't time! Get over here! There's only 10 seconds left!
And I'll jump on them! And I'll carry on jumping them until I get blisters! I can think of something even more unpleasant to do! And then I'll... What the hell is that?!
Arthur, quick! Over here!
What the hell is it?
It's a fleet of flying saucers! What do you think it is? Quick! You've got to get hold of this rock! Just that, it's a Bogon Constructor Fleet.
What?
A Bogon Constructor Fleet. I picked up news of their arrival a few hours ago on my subby's the radio.
Lord, I don't think I can cope with any more of this. I think I'll just go and have a little lie down somewhere.
No, just stay here. Keep calm and just take hold of...
People of Earth, your attention, please. This is Prostitnik Fogon Jantz of the Galactic Hyperspace Planning Council. As you will no doubt be aware, the plans for the development of the outlying regions of the western spiral arm of the galaxy require the building of a hyperspace express route through your star system, and regrettably, your planet is one of those scheduled for demolition. The process will take slightly less than 2 of your Earth minutes. Thank you very much. There's no point in acting all surprised about it. All the planning charts and demolition orders have been on display at your local planning department in Alpha Centauri for 50 of your Earth years. So you've had plenty of time to lodge any formal complaints. And it's far too late to start making a fuss about it now. What do you mean you've never been to Alpha Centauri? Oh, for heaven's sake, mankind, it's only 4 light years away, you know. I'm sorry, but if you can't be bothered to take an interest in local affairs, that's your own lookout. Energize the demolition beams. Oh, I don't know. Apathetic bloody planet. I have no sympathy at all.
Never been through a matter transference beam before, you've probably lost some salt and protein. The beer you had should have cushioned your system a bit. How are you feeling?
Like a military academy. Bits of me keep on passing out. If I asked where the hell we were, would I regret it?
We're safe.
Oh, good.
We're in a small galley cabin in one of the spaceships of the Vogon Constructor Fleet.
Ah, this is obviously some strange usage of the word safe that I wasn't previously aware of.
I'll have a look for the light.
All right. How did we get here?
We hitched a lift.
Excuse me? Are you trying to tell me that we just stuck out our thumbs and some green, bug-eyed monster stuck his head out and said, "Hi, fellas, hop right in. I can take you as far as the Basingstoke roundabout."
Well, the thumb's an electronic sub-ether device. The roundabout's at Barnard Star 6 light-years away, but otherwise that's more or less right.
And the bug-eyed monster?
It's green, yes.
Fine. When can I go home?
You can't. Ah, found the light.
Good grief. Is this really the interior of a flying saucer?
It certainly is. What do you think?
Well, it's a bit squalid, isn't it?
What did you expect?
Well, I don't know. Gleaming control panels, flashing lights, computer screens. Not old mattresses.
Here, have a look at this.
What is it?
The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. It's a sort of electronic book. It'll tell you everything you want to know. That's its job.
I like the cover. Don't panic. It's the first helpful or intelligible thing anybody's said to me all day.
That's why it sells so well. Here, press this button and the screen will give you the index. Right, now fast wind through to V. There you are. Vogon Constructor Fleets. Now, enter that code on the tabulator and read what it says.
Vogon Constructor Fleets. Here is what to do if you want to get a lift from a Vogon. Forget it. They are one of the most unpleasant races in the galaxy. Not actually evil, but bad-tempered, bureaucratic, officious, and callous. They wouldn't even lift a finger to save their own grandmothers from the ravenous bug-bladder beast of Tral without orders signed in triplicate, sent in, sent back, queried, lost, found, subjected to public inquiry, lost again, and finally buried in soft peat for 3 months and recycled as firelighters. The best way to get a drink out of a Vogon is stick your finger down his throat, and the best way to irritate him is to feed his grandmother to the ravenous bug-bladder beast of Tral.
What a strange book. But how did we get a lift, then?
The Dentrassi let us on board.
I thought you said they were called Bogons.
Vogons.
Ah, not Dentrassi.
No. The Dentrassi are the in-flight caterers. Great guys. They're the best cooks and the best drinks mixers, and they don't give a wet slap about anything else. And they always help hitchhikers. Partly because they like the company, but mostly because it annoys the Vogons. Which is exactly what you need to know if you're a penniless hitchhiker trying to see the marvels of the galaxy for less than 30 Altarian dollars a day.
But the book doesn't even mention them.
Ah, it's not very accurate. I'm researching the new edition. That's my job. Fun, isn't it?
It's amazing.
Unfortunately, I got stuck on the Earth for rather longer than I intended. I came for a week and was stranded for 15 years.
But how did you get there in the first place?
Oh, I got a lift with a teaser.
teaser?
You know, rich kids with nothing to do. They cruise around looking for planets which haven't made interstellar contact yet and buzz them.
Buzz them?
Yes. They find some isolated spot, then land right by some poor unsuspecting soul whom no one's ever going to believe, and then strut up and down in front of him wearing silly antennae on their heads and making meep meep noises. Rather childish, really.
What the devil's that?
Listen, it might be important. It's the Vogon captain making an announcement on the PA.
But I can't speak Vogon.
You don't need to. Just put this fish in your ear.
What?
It's only a little one.
Yeah.
Have a good time. Message repeat. This is your captain speaking, so stop whatever you're doing and pay attention. First of all, I see from our instrument that we have a couple of hitchhikers aboard our ship. Hello. Hello, wherever you are. I just want to make it totally clear that you are not at all welcome. I worked hard to get where I am today, and I did become captain of a Vogon constructor ship simply so that I could turn it into a taxi service for degenerate freeloaders. I have sent out a search party, and as soon as they find you, I will put you off the ship. If you're very lucky, I might read you some of my poetry first.
Secondly, we are about to jump into hyperspace for the journey to Barnard Star. On arrival, we will stay in dock for a 72-hour refit, and no one's to leave the ship during that time. I repeat, all planet leave is cancelled. I've just had an unhappy love affair, so I don't see why anyone else should have a good time. Message ends.
Charming, these Vogons. I wish I had a daughter so I could forbid her to marry one.
You wouldn't need to. They've got as much sex appeal as a road accident. Oh, and you better be prepared for the jump into hyperspace. It's unpleasantly like being drunk.
Well, what's unpleasant about being drunk?
You ask a glass of water.
Ford?
Yes?
What's this fish doing in my ear?
Translating for you. Look under Babel Fish in the book.
Whoa, what's happening?
We're going into hyperspace. I'll never be crawled with gin and tonic again.
The Babel Fish is small, yellow, leech-like, and probably the oddest thing in the universe. It feeds on brainwave energy, absorbing all unconscious frequencies and then excreting telepathically a matrix formed from the conscious frequencies and nerve signals picked up from the speech centers of the brain. The practical upshot of which is that if you stick one in your ear, you can instantly understand anything sent to you in any form of language. The speech you hear decodes the brainwave matrix. Now, it is such a bizarrely improbable coincidence that anything so mind-bogglingly useful could evolve purely by chance that some thinkers have chosen to see it as a final, clinching proof of the non-existence of God. The argument goes something like this. I refuse to prove that I exist, says God, for proof denies faith, and without faith I am nothing. But, says man, the Babel fish is a dead giveaway, isn't it? It proves you exist, therefore you don't. QED. Oh dear, says God, I hadn't thought of that, and promptly vanishes in a puff of logic. Oh, that was easy, says man, and for an encore he proves that black is white, and gets killed on the next zebra crossing. Most leading theologians claim that this argument is a load of dingo's kidneys, but that didn't stop Ulan Khalufid making a small fortune when he used it as the central theme of his best-selling book, Well, That About Wraps It Up for God. Meanwhile, the poor Babel fish, by effectively removing all barriers of communication between different cultures and races, has caused more and bloodier wars than anything else in the history of creation.
What an extraordinary book. Did you get much useful material on Earth?
I was able to extend the entry, yes.
Oh, let's see what it says in this edition, then.
Okay.
Let's see. E. Earth. Pop out the code. There's the page. Oh, it doesn't seem to have an entry.
Yes, it does. Look. There, at the bottom of the screen. Under Eccentrica Galumbis, the triple-breasted whore of Eroticon 6.
What, there? Oh, yes.
Harmless? Is that all it's got to say? One word? Harmless? What the hell's that supposed to mean?
Well, there are 100 billion stars in the galaxy and a limited amount of space in the book. And no one knew much about the Earth.
Well, I hope you've managed to rectify that a bit.
Yes, I transmitted a new entry off to the editor.
Good.
He had to trim it a bit, but it's still an improvement.
What does it say now?
Mostly harmless.
Mostly harmless?
Oh, come on. I think that's pretty good coverage for a disintegrated pile of rubble.
And that's supposed to make me feel better, is it?
Shh!
What?
That.
What is it?
Well, if we're lucky, it's just the Vogons come to throw us into space.
And if we're unlucky?
The captain might want to read us some of his poetry first.
Vogon poetry is, of course, the third worst in the universe. The second worst is that of the Asgoths of Kriya. During a recitation by their poet master, Grunthus the Flatulent, of his poem Ode to a Small Lump of Green Putty I Found in My Armpit One Midsummer Morning, four of his audience died of internal hemorrhaging, and the president of the Mid-Galactic Arts Nobbling Council only survived by gnawing one of his own legs off. Grunthus is reported to have been disappointed by the poem's reception and was about to embark on a reading of his 12-book epic entitled Zen and the Art of Going to the Lavatory when his own major intestine, in a desperate attempt to save the universe, leapt straight up through his neck and throttled his brain. The very worst poetry of all perished along with its creator, Paul Neil Mill Johnston of Redbridge, Essex, England, in the destruction of the planet Earth. Vogon poetry is mild by comparison, but when the Vogon captain began to read, it provoked this reaction from Ford Prefect. And this from Arthur Dent.
Oh, freckled Grunt Bugly, thy micturations are to me as purdled gabble blotting in a lurgid bee. Group, I implore thee, my hooting turling drones, and hoopsiously strangle me with crinkly bindle words, for otherwise I will rend thee in the gobblewort with my burgle crunching. See if I don't. So, Earthlings, I present you with a simple choice. I was going to throw you straight out into the empty blackness of space to die horribly and slowly, but there is one way, one simple way, in which you may save yourselves. Think very carefully, for you hold your very lives in your hands. Now, choose. Either die in the vacuum of space, or... Tell me how good you thought my poem was.
Oh, I thought that some of the metaphysical imagery was really particularly effective.
Yes, and interesting rhythmic devices, too, which seem to counterpoint, yeah,
the surrealism of the underlying metaphor.
And then die in the vacuum of space.
What?
Now, wait a minute.
I'm sorry if that seems mean, but it's the only thing I'm much good at, so I like to keep in practice.
What, writing poetry?
No, being mean. Guard, take them to number 3 airlock and throw them out.
No, don't worry, Arthur. I'll think of something.
I don't want to die now. I've still got a headache. I don't want to go to heaven with a headache. I'd be all cross and wouldn't enjoy it.
Ow! Ow!
Counterpoint the surrealism of the underlying metaphor. Oh. Death's too good for them.